Back together again, you and I chatting it up, kicking off a brand new week, Monday, August 11th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. We kicked off the new week talking from a strategy point of view about a proposed Trump White House takeover of policing in Washington, D.C. Former FBI agent, current University of New Haven senior criminal justice lecturer Ken Gray talked about that White House order regarding law enforcement in the U.S. Capitol and how it could be implemented. Former Time Magazine senior reporter, Professor Emeritus, also of political science at St. Peter's University, Alan Sanders dropped by to share his thoughts on this coming Friday's upcoming meeting in Alaska between President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Under the authorities vested in me as the President of the United States, I'm officially invoking Section 740 of the District of Columbia Home Rule Act. You know what that is? And placing the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department under direct federal control.
All right, there you have it. As never a dull day with Donald John Trump, is there? Man, oh, man, oh, man. Now, hi, how are you? I put up a question, and this was, no, putting up this question on our Facebook page, facebook.com/voiceofCT, is kind of like dangling a fresh steak and the chum among the pack of sharks here. And again, I mean that with all the love of the world. But I said, well, what should I put up for a question today? And I said, well, I know what I'll put up. Because, we have to stir it up a little here. So you heard it, and this is one of these things that illustrates how much of a 50-50 country we are. Very simple question. You can weigh in, and we'll begin here. What are your thoughts about Mr. Trump's new steps, including the use of the National Guard to fight crime in Washington, D.C.? Now, above and beyond that, I have come to the conclusion here. And again, this is not going to be anything revolutionary or earth-shattering, because you may have heard this already. Donald Trump, for however many people love him or hate him or despise him, or would love to wrap their arms around the guy, give him a big kiss, and mess up all that bouffanted hair of his, I have come to the realization that this guy may be, just may be, in one aspect, this guy just may be the greatest single politician to ever occupy the White House. He might. And what do I mean by that? I'm not necessarily judging import or success or failure of any of his policies here. But man, oh man, does this guy know how to keep his opposition and his the people that don't like him. I have never seen a guy keep people off balance the way this guy does. Honest to God. And you may say, well, hey, you know, you can call up the cops and do anything he wants because he's the president and he just cited the federal statute. Yeah, I know that. But here's the thing. Nobody else does. And just when you think he may go a day without doing something to drive the other side nuts, he does. I've never seen a guy in the Oval Office do this. It is a thing in the view of political tactics, not whether you agree with him or not on any of this stuff, but it's a thing of beauty to see how he attacks the political game here. I'm not talking about necessarily whether anything is right or wrong here. We can comment on that at 333-9422, 333-WICC. But think about this for just a second. Think about this for just a second. Think of the political tactics that are going on here. All right. In fact, you know what? Let's take a break here. I want to come back and explain why this is so brilliant. Whether or not it works, it is a stroke of sheer political genius here. And what have I been telling you since this past November and Election Day? There was a choice between crazy and broken. And just enough people pick crazy over broken. And sometimes crazy is diabolically good and right here as to keeping the broken side off balance. So you tell me, what are your thoughts about Mr. Trump's new steps, including the announced use of the National Guard to fight crime in Washington, D.C.? And I'll tell you, coming back, why it's a no-brainer. He can't lose here. He can't. And whether you despise the guy or love the guy or something in between, it is a brilliant stroke of politics. But you tell me what you think. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC.
The murder rate in Washington today is higher than that of Bogota, Colombia, Mexico City, some of the places that you hear about.
All right, there you go. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Boy, this guy, despite what you think of him, that's not what we're debating here. But when I saw a couple of card-carrying progressives say this the other day, names you would recognize, I forgot who they were, but I'm like, wow, somebody at that level said that. This guy might be the greatest political tactician ever. Because understand what he's done here. He has said, listen, if I have to, we're going to use the National Guard in the nation's capital. Look what happened to the kid from Doge last week. There are carjackings, there are murders, whatever. And what happens is he now positions his opposition to say, well, but the murder rate and the carjacking rate is coming down. Okay. But they're still out there. So he and his supporters will say, well, there's still too much. See, it makes the opposition, either directly or indirectly, try and justify crime. And look, Trump knows, whether you love or despise the guy, he knows there are certain things heading into the midterms next year. This is what this is all about. He wants to flex his bona fides on immigration, on crime, on other things like that. Do you see what else now? He's thinking of doing something that a lot of Republicans have hated for years. You know, lowering, for example, this came out today, taking marijuana off of that, whatever that drug schedule is that prevents a lot of medical research here. He is doing stuff here that he may not actually care about. But, man, you talk about keeping the opposition off balance. So, in other words, somebody comes out today and says, well, I don't see why he's doing this, whatever. But, see, they know that if he does it, and if the crime rate drops down to where it hasn't been in 20 or 30 years, he gets up there and says, well, I was right, wasn't I? I'm not going to buy into the, well, this is him saying it, not me, but I'm, pontificating here. He may come out there and say, well, I'm not buying into that old mantra that you have to be content with a certain amount of crime. And we hear that all the time, right? Big cities, celebrate when they get crime down. And I know it's impossible to stamp it out, but man, this is just, this guy's instincts or whomever is telling him to do stuff or not to do stuff. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about his instincts and who he's listening to and who he's not. This is not to debate. I'm not debating policy here. I don't know if putting the National Guard on the streets of an American city is going to help do anything in the long run. It probably does. I'm just marveling at the tactician here or the tactics here. I mean, you talk about keeping the opposition off balance. I can't wait to see what kind of opposition he'll have with this. over the next 3 or 4 hours. See, that's what this is really about. It's getting his opposition and getting the Democrats to defend biological males in sports. It's getting them to defend the Biden policies on the border. It's getting them to defend not having big cities as safe and as crime-free as possible. Man, oh man, who'd have thought this was coming? And again, it's getting maybe members of his own party, Republicans who are stone cold against it, to say, well, okay, maybe we should, take marijuana off of that classification from the feds that drops medical research. So this is, man, as a tactician, I'm not talking about the efficacy of the policy, but as a tactician, this is pretty funny to watch. You know what my troika is for this stuff? Peanuts, popcorn, and pork rinds. Stock up. And your favorite beverage. David listening to us out in California, in San Francisco. David, good afternoon. How are you?
Well, not too bad, although it crosses my mind. Did Jeffrey Epstein ever visit Washington, D.C.?
I don't know.
Well, if you think about it, everything that Donald Trump does in recent appointments has been to destroy evidence for his cronies. So,
do we actually know that? Where did you actually read that he's destroying evidence of his cronies?
Oh, well, the whole the putting 1,000 FBI agents to redact his name from the Epstein file seems like a big logical on that.
Well, David, let me ask you something. And on the record here, I don't care who's in the Epstein files. I've been saying this for 5 or 6 or 7 years. The Biden people should have opened everything up. Doesn't it stand to reason that if there was anything really bad about Trump in there, we would have heard it through the campaign?
Well, I think we did a long time ago.
What did we hear? I actually forgot about that. What did we hear specifically about what he did?
Well, raping the 13-year-old girl.
Wait, whoa. You're going to make that allegation with what evidence exactly that was adjudicated in a court of law?
Well, the girl filed charges in one county, then she was terrified out, and then she tried to file it in another county where she was terrified out.
Okay, so why didn't the Biden people use this during the campaign? Because if I'm running against a guy like this, I make commercials so nobody could miss it. Why didn't we really hear about that?
Yeah, well, that's a funny thing, you know.
Yeah, it is. David, I thank you for the call.
Going into Washington, D.C., if he's going to take over the police department, did Jeffrey Epstein ever visit Washington, D.C., and did the Washington, D.C. evidence locker have something on Epstein that Trump wants to call
David, and I thank you for the call. Now, before it was Russia, and now all of a sudden, well, you know, maybe that Russia thing was nothing. David, thank you for the call. Now it's the Jeffrey Epstein thing. And again, I don't care who the Jeffrey Epstein files take down. If Donald Trump gets wheeled out on a stretcher in handcuffs and a straitjacket tomorrow over Epstein, I couldn't care less. But see, and David, our dear friend from California, thank you. There is an exact example of what I was talking about. Love or hate Trump, he said, screw conventionality. I'm going to keep my opponents completely off balance here to on any given day. They don't know how to respond to me. And to me, from an independent political observer here who's just looking at this, it's a thing of beauty. I've never seen a guy be able to do this. And to say that the president committed sex crimes, I mean, come on. If there's evidence, let's see it. Take it to a prosecutor. Lord knows they've indicted the guy in enough stuff. Go to Joe in Guilford, who's with us. Joe, good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, Paul, I feel so much better after I have a grandson that's 26 years old that lives in, or who, that works in Arlington and is in D.C. a lot. And we went to visit him.
Yeah.
And just about a couple of months ago. And we were walking through Alexandria and we came out of a store.
Yeah.
And I was almost knocked to the ground by this guy carrying out, running out, carrying a bunch of clothes.
Great, clothes
from this thing. And I just, it was outrageous.
Yeah.
I felt outraged by it. And I, you know, I, it just, oh, it really upset me. And I thought, oh, it's just disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank God for Trump. I'm sorry, I do. I mean, no apologies. I want someone with the fortitude to do what needs to be done. He doesn't give a damn what this guy in San Francisco says.
No, Joe, I get it. I just, everybody's entitled to his opinion. I don't want callers to, you know,
so many people will agree with, not me. You know, I'm sure, but you've got to look at the, I know you're looking at it as a tactical issue.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it as a real practical thing.
Well, that's because his tactics tell him, Joe, and thank you for the call, Joe. Appreciate it there in Guilford on the Shoreline. His tacticians or Mr. Trump's thinking here, probably saying, well, screw people. It's not about liking me. And it's a perfect example of our last two phone calls here. I don't care whether they like me. It's what policies am I putting out there that are going to eventually cut through the other side and get me votes. How might this all work when you have local police, the National Guard, there's rumors of FBI agents being involved here? Logistically, is this really designed to work, or is this just, once again, some, you know, political posturing here? Joining us right now, gentlemen, we have on the radio station here in times like this, University of New Haven senior criminal justice lecturer, is a former FBI agent as well, Ken Gray, to talk about this. Hey, Ken, it's Paul. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good to be with you again.
Did this surprise you, Ken, when you heard about this? Did you hear this and go, did I hear what I just heard?
So, as you said before, this was alluded to back on Friday. So this was not a big surprise that the president made this move. The way that it's going to work out, so Metro PD has 3,100 police officers. They're talking about adding in 500 federal law enforcement officers, 100 from the FBI, 40 from ATF, some from DEA, some from ICE, some from the U.S. Marshals.
Mm.
They are all going to be augmenting Metro PD. But over the short range that this federal emergency would allow them to federalize this, they're not going to make major changes to the way Metro PD does business. Instead, it sounds like to me that they're just going to be augmenting their forces, especially in hot spots, places where the crime rate is higher than elsewhere.
Is this, Ken Gray? Yeah, I was wondering about this. Is this a fact of just, you know, getting a message out there or having some of these people just visible on the ground? You know, kind of like if you talk to an alarm person who installs alarms on homes and businesses, and you probably heard it before. I've heard it from friends of mine that do this, that say, well, a lot of the effect is seeing the signs that, hey, this place now has an alarm or protected by ABC alarm. You think, Ken, from your experience, they're relying on some of that just for the buzz to get around here or not?
I think that's part of it. So there, when New Jersey added in foot patrols, they everybody said foot patrols is not going to be able to respond to crime quickly enough, and so it's not going to be effective. What turned out, though, was that the people in New Jersey really liked it. They felt safer, even though they weren't any safer. So I think if you have a higher presence of law enforcement in these hotspot areas, people are going to feel safer, even if they may not in actuality add that much into the effectiveness of it. That's one aspect. The other aspect is National Guard.
Yeah.
The National Guard will be, for the most part, they'll be protecting federal buildings, and Washington, D.C. has an awful lot of federal buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can have a presence there, but really they can detain people, but they can't make arrests. That's going to take law enforcement officers. This is going to take Metro PD officers. Federal agents are peace officers. They can make arrests when for a felony,
yeah.
But they don't know what the local laws are. So there's a lot of violations that might occur that the federal agents that are being tasked with joining in on this will have no idea whether or not it's a violation and what violation it is, because they have their own book of violations that they enforce there for Metro PD.
And Ken Gray is the guest, as usual, fine guest from the University of New Haven's Criminal Justice Program, retired FBI officer. Ken, communications here, I mean, how does this happen? How does this work? Are they going to just share radio frequencies, use cell phones? How logistically, how is that taken care of?
Well, that's still going to have to be worked out, but I'm sure that right now, with the task force approach to this, they will marry up agents with Metro PD officers. And so it'll be an augmentation of force. In some cases, they may be given radios. In some cases, they may be able to change the frequency of bureau radios over to the trunk radios that are being used by Metro. But that's all to be worked out. But here's the thing, is that this federalized process, for the emergency, President Trump has 48 hours, which is nothing.
Mm.
He can inform Congress it's going to continue, and that's 30 days. After that, he would have to have Congress approve for the federalization of the law enforcement there in the D.C. area, and that's not necessarily a guarantee. So this may very well be, as you were saying, posturing. That is sending the message that they have to do something. The real problem here in D.C. is the 14-year-old to the 17-year-old, which really Metro PD can't do much about, and the federal law enforcement won't be able to do anything about. That's going to require changes in law, and that takes Congress.
Ken Gray, the guest. Ken, finally, D.C., like many big cities in the state, and this thing goes in waves and peaks and valleys. You and I know this. But when a city, Ken, of any size, says, hey, look at these numbers. We've done better with carjackings, with armed robbery, with sexual assaults. Assuming those numbers are legitimate, unless they hire a boatload more cops, Ken, which usually doesn't happen, how do municipalities get crime to go down like this? What are the, I don't know, the surefire ways or the most tried and true things where mayors or people of authority or police chiefs can say, hey, look what we've done over the past couple of years? How's that generally handled?
So the crime statistics show that the numbers are down, but they're still extremely high.
Yeah.
Washington, D.C.'s crime rate is much higher than cities that size elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so they really do have a crime problem there in Washington, D.C. To get crime down, they need to focus in on hot spots, these small pockets of areas where crime is through the roof. And crime is through the roof in those hot spots because of the 14-year-olds to the 17-year-olds for the most part. And so I don't think that this federalizing is going to make a big difference in the short time frame that they have. They really need to be able to change the law in these areas so you can do something serious. When a person 14 years old commits one of these crimes, they get a slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
They need to be able to change the law to give some more exposure for penalties for kids committing these crimes in this area.
Ken Gray from the University of New Haven. Ken, always great to have you on. We appreciate it, sir, and we'll talk down the road. Ken, be good. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, there you go. Ken Gray, a distinguished lecturer in the criminal justice, senior lecturer, criminal justice at UNH, retired FBI agent. We talk to this gentleman very often, thankfully, about the national political scene, former Time Magazine senior reporter and Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey, Alan Sanders. Lost in today's news regarding the D.C. policing thing, there's supposed to be a really important meeting this Friday in Alaska between President Trump, Russia's President Vladimir Putin, and maybe Volodymyr Zelensky. We'll see what happens. Hey, Professor, it's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Very good, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well, Professor. Thank you. And, man, over the weekend, we were deluged with this news that it's at least going to be a two-person meeting on Friday, maybe a third. Looks like Zelensky's going to stay away. But, boy, this certainly is a critical time for this. And Professor, I think people need to know that in a meeting like this, Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin are not just going to sit down and shoot the breeze. I mean, I can imagine the preparations for this meeting must be incredible.
Well, that's right, or at least they should be incredible.
Yeah.
But, you know, to this moment, I understand they haven't even agreed on a place where they're going to meet in Alaska.
Yeah.
So one has to wonder about how much preparation has actually been done. You know, the president announced this about 2 weeks ago. It's a bit of scattershot, kind of an approach. Maybe Mr. Zelensky will come. Maybe he won't come. The fact that it's a bit of a scattershot approach is underlined by the fact that Chancellor Merz of West Germany scheduled a Zoom meeting, a virtual meeting, on Wednesday, bringing together all of the European leaders and presumably Mr. Trump as well to sort of talk about this before Trump goes into the meeting with Putin. So if the Europeans are a little nervous and they don't know what's going on and that's why they've called for a meeting, I wonder about how much preparation has actually been done to discuss whatever they're going to discuss on Friday.
And Professor, you well know, usually, of course, nothing usual with the Trump White House, but usually when these things happen, you and I in the past have heard of weeks of preparation, specific language that'll be used, who'll be sitting who, where, who gets to speak first. And I can just imagine this being that, or not anything there, or maybe something in between. And now we hear on the weekend, which I found fascinating, the discussion of, well, and Mr. Trump may be right about this, I think, well, both sides are going to have to give up something or are not going to be 100% happy for this thing to even have a shot, right?
Well, that's right. But the question is, who's going to be giving up what and who's going to be giving up most of what? We don't really know that. In terms of land, the only power that really has grabbed significant land in this war is Russia. You know, Ukraine has occasionally captured bits of Russian territory, but nothing significant, and I'm not even sure they hold it to this day. I mean, you got to take a look at what the interests are of the parties.
Yeah.
Mr. Putin wants a chunk of land from Ukraine, and he also wants NATO to stay out of Ukraine, wants pledges that Ukraine will not be part of NATO, wants a largely demilitarized Ukraine, and really wants a Ukraine that stays neutral. The Europeans, of course, are leery of all of that because they all remember the Soviet invasions during the communist era, and, of course, the Soviet invasions during World War II that they never receded. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, meant the occupation of Eastern Europe, including Ukraine, which was part of the Soviet Union at that time. So the Europeans want some sort of real peace. It's not clear what that would be. The one thing the Europeans are clear on is they don't want negotiations to start until there is a ceasefire. And that's true for Mr. Zelensky as well. Russia has indicated nothing of the sort. So it's really hard positions on everyone's side and not clear at all what Mr. Trump hopes to accomplish and not clear at all what kind of preparations he has made. Every time he had a press conference today and every time he's spoken about what's going on in the Ukraine-Russia war, it's been very vague and not clear at all that he's really thought it through. In fact, today, he seemed to suggest that he was going to Russia for the summit. And, of course, Alaska is not part of Russia. Alaska is part of the United States. So you really have to wonder how much Mr. Trump is closely involved and on point here with whatever he's going to be discussing with Mr. Putin.
And we saw, at least I did over the weekend, Professor, you know, there's a fear there. It's always brought up going back to pre-World War II days or the outset of World War II with, you know, Neville Chamberlain in Britain, you know, peace in our time, waving the document. And of course, you and I and millions of people know how that turned out.
Yes, of course. And a lot of people are making that analogy. Why are you going to talk with Mr. Putin right now? In fact, many people are suggesting that the fact that the meeting is occurring is a big concession to Putin, because he's basically an international outcast. He's got a criminal warrant out by the International Criminal Court on him. He also has never been to the United States for the past 10 years, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
Most foreign leaders shun him. And so the fact that he's actually going to meet with President Trump, the very fact of the meeting is a major concession that brings Putin back into the international fold. And many people are upset about that.
And finally, Professor, yeah, but then I sit here on this show, and I'm sure you've spoken to other people on your appearances, where you wonder, you meaning the world, you know, in general, you, we, whatever, we wonder, how does this end? We've been at this a better part of 3 years from now, and if nothing like this is even tried, and both sides being as dug in, going back to hundreds of years of history in that land, as in that area, as you have said, how does it end, right?
Well, yeah, we don't know, and that's a big question. It may simply be a question of exhaustion. One side or the other or both at some point may be exhausted and say, okay, we'll have a ceasefire. We'll put the negotiations off until the ceasefire goes into effect, and then we'll negotiate whatever we can negotiate. That is, in fact, what many people say should be happening now, a ceasefire and then negotiations later. But it really boils down to who is exhausted or who blinks first.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's unpredictable.
Professor Alan Sanders, always good to have you. Former Time Magazine senior reporter and a professor emeritus of political science, St. Peter's University in Jersey City. Professor, we shall watch, and you and I will chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
All right. My pleasure. Take care, Paul.
Appreciate it. Good guy there, Professor Alan Sanders, with some pretty good analysis there.